You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we have a game seven. The Rockets led by as much as 17 in the first half, by 10 at the break, but ultimately seemed to run out of gas, didn't have nearly enough to beat the Warriors at Oracle in a potential closeout Game 6. Warriors winning 115-86 to force the winner-take-all Game 7 at Toyota Center in downtown Houston on Monday night. On that note, welcome into Locked On Rockets, the only home for daily podcast commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. As mentioned, the Rockets lost by 29 in Saturday's Game 6. Despite having a 10-point lead at the break, outscored by 39 in the second half, scoring just 16 points in the third, only 9 in the fourth. Ultimately, I would say that the margin is a little bit misleading from the standpoint of we have seen so many wild swings in this series already, from the Warriors winning by double digits in Houston in Game 1, to the Rockets by 20-plus in Game 2, then the Warriors by 40 in Game 3, until the Rockets won the next two games, then the Warriors won by nearly 30. So ultimately, I don't take that much from the final margin. Ultimately, what happens a lot in a series like this, at least up until a Game 7, if you have one team that's down 15 or 20 points midway through the fourth quarter, quite frankly, it's sort of silly if you don't wave the white flag, because when the game is gone, you need to do everything you can to try and conserve energy a little bit for the game that's next to come, because with it being every other day and these plane flights that are 3.5 hours, even tomorrow, which is not a game day, Sunday, the Rockets, they're going to practice, they're going to have a 3.5 hour plane flight, and then there's still the issue of Chris Paul to get sorted out. Will he or won't he play in a Game 7? In Game 6, he did not play. James Harden and Eric Gordon, who shared the backcourt in Chris Paul's absence, generally played well. James, 32 points, 9 assists, 7 rebounds. Eric Gordon, 19 points, 7 of 12 shooting. But the team as a whole, 21 turnovers. And I think that's something that you could definitely attribute to not having the steadying influence of Chris Paul, which has been such a big part of the Rockets' excellence and their wins this series at not excessively turning the ball over. So even if Chris Paul, you were able to mitigate his absence from a playmaking standpoint from what James and Eric gave you, 51 points on a combined, 17 of 36 shooting, nearly 50%. Eric made 4 of his 6 threes, James 4 of 12. So finally, not going to say that making a third of your threes is a great night for James, but for a guy who entered 0 of his last 20, it's at least progress. Ultimately, the Rockets, I don't know if they necessarily missed Chris so much from a scoring standpoint. I think they missed his steadiness. And then ultimately, once it got away from them, some shaky officiating, we'll talk about that. And then Steph Curry and Klay Thompson getting going in Oracle Arena, scoring a combined 64 points on above 50% shooting. Ultimately, it was going to be a game that was very tough for the Rockets to win. If anything, I would say you can take some consolation from the fact that Steph Curry and Klay Thompson shot so well to the point where the Rockets ended up losing by nearly 30, because ultimately you could what-if a lot. The Rockets, they led by as much as 17 in the first half, led by 10 at the break. Mentioned the officiating. If you follow me on Twitter, at Ben Dubose, you've seen my comments on that. I'm not going to go on at that much length on this podcast because it seems sort of pointless at this point. It is what it is. Whether you want to say that the league won in a Game 7, you want to go true conspiracy and say that, or if you just want to give credit to Golden State for having a great home crowd and maybe the home crowd influencing the Ken Maurer and Ed Malloy-led crew, whatever it was, the Warriors clearly got the benefit of the doubt with officials, and I'm not just saying that as a Rockets guy. There are plenty of Warriors beat writers, national beat writers. Just look at HP Basketball. That's a Twitter feed of Matt Moore, one of the best national guys in the business, and he ripped the officials to shreds for the double standard on one end to the other. To put it in context, the Rockets as a team had 17 free throw attempts for the game, and at least two of those came in garbage time. Kevin Durant by himself had 14. Just a complete double standard on the Kevin Durant drive to the bucket compared to James Harden and Eric Gordon, and it ended up kind of taking a toll on the Rockets from three. In the first half, they came out very, very hot from three. I called it a regression to the mean after the first quarter, which they ended up 17 because they were making so many looks that they missed in game five and an opportunity to put it away early. But what ended up happening is that when James Harden and Eric Gordon attacked to the rim and the Warriors were able to essentially reach in and not be called for fouls, then the three-point attempts also dried up because there was no reason to help if the initial defender on Harden or Gordon was going to be able to play physical without being able to be called for a foul. So not only did Harden and Gordon have a lot of turnovers, 14 between them, 9 for James, 5 for Eric, and in my opinion, yes, some of those are attributed to the officiating, but it also had a role to do with the Rockets cooling off from 3, 11 of 21 in the first half, and just 4 of 18 in the second half. So it's a confluence of factors. Certainly, I think having Chris Paul's steadying influence would have helped because I think Gerald Green in particular was a net negative in this game with a lot of unforced errors. It felt like 3 turnovers, a few missed assignments defensively. But regardless, be it the Game 7 effect or simply Golden State having an excellent home crowd, it is what it is. They got the benefit of the doubt with the officials, and now you have a home Game 7. And that's kind of where I want to lead before I go into any individual analysis. Everything is all right there in front of you. I know there's still the Chris Paul question, but ultimately the Rockets led by 17 after a quarter and by double digits at the half, even without Chris Paul on the road. There is still plenty, especially if you play at home, get a friendlier whistle. If there's two big benefits from playing at home, I think you generally, A, get a friendlier whistle, and B, you get better production from role players. And ultimately, those were kind of the deficiencies for the Rockets tonight, who got 32, 9, and 7 from James Harden, got 19 points on above 50% shooting from Eric Gordon, didn't get nearly enough help from the supporting cast. Maybe some of that's linked to the officiating, but Game 7 is a perfect opportunity for redemption on all fronts. And the analog that I thought of during this game for a lot of reasons, and throughout this whole series, the last Western Conference Finals to go to 7 games with the 7th game not at Oracle Arena was the 2002 Western Conference Finals between the Lakers and Kings. And of course we all remember the Game 6 in that game had some extremely controversial officiating just like this one, and it went in the favor of the home team, which was the Lakers. But ultimately the Kings had a home Game 7 and they had every opportunity to win that game. Unfortunately they didn't. They didn't execute down the stretch and in overtime, and the Lakers were able to steal it. But if you're the Rockets, you can't dwell on the officiating. Yes, I think they were victimized. I think they got the short end of the stick. But now you have a home Game 7. This is what you played all season long for. And this is part of why, for example, I've said throughout this series that the deeper you go into it, the harder it is to win on the road. Because all of the effects, things like the fatigue, the crowd, the officiating, the turnovers, it all gets accentuated the deeper you go into a series based on who has home court. That's why it was so paramount for the Rockets to take Game 3 or Game 4. Thankfully, they were able to take Game 4 to take back home court advantage in this series. And many of the things that the Warriors had in their favor tonight, the Rockets should have in their favor in a home Game 7. So not all is lost. I would not worry about the margin because we have seen the margin fluctuate wildly throughout this series. And some of it's by design, because the team that's losing, it's easy to kind of call off the dogs. Rockets outscored 31-9 in the fourth quarter, and I think it was pretty clear early on the Rockets realized that this ultimately was not their game. So for the Rockets, it's a rough night. If you want to take some solace, quite frankly, I think you can say that Klay Thompson and Steph Curry shooting as well as they did, 64 points on above 50% shooting, plus 33 for Curry, plus 32 for Klay. To me, that takes away some of the what-if effect. Because, yeah, the officiating was bad. Yes, the Rockets had an early lead. And some of their looks you could attribute to getting too many transition opportunities and the turnovers, which the Rockets do need to do a better job at limiting. And hopefully Chris Paul is able to return in a Game 7. But to help that. But as far as initial thoughts, and by the way, Steph and Curry, I mentioned, or Steph and Klay, I should say, 64 points. They were a ridiculous 50%, 14 of 28 on threes. 50% at that high volume is just ridiculous. But to me, you can take some solace from that, at least I can, from the standpoint of if the Warriors, with their four all-stars, get that level of shooting to where they shot 16 of 38 overall, and the two big guns literally shot 50%, they're just simply that good. We know what their A game is. Fortunately, it's going to be tougher to get that A game at Toyota Center in Houston. And secondly, you know, yes, the officiating could have been a lot better. You could have reduced some turnovers. But ultimately, if Steph and Clay are going to shoot that well, they're going to be very, very tough to beat. You tip your cap. They did a great job. That's not to say that the officials had no role. That's not to say that there aren't some things that the Rockets could clean up. But ultimately, it was the Warriors' night, just as it was in Game 3. And you know what happened after Game 3? The Rockets regrouped, and they were able to get Game 4, and that one being in Oakland. Now they have to regroup in two nights and get a Game 7 at Toyota Center in Houston. Yes, this loss sucks. The Rockets did have a 17-point lead and a double-digit lead at the half in a game that would have gotten them to the NBA Finals and conquered the demon, being Golden State. They didn't do it, but ultimately, the reason you won 65 games in the regular season, everything you played hard for all year is to get the Game 7, the decisive one against the Warriors at home. Well, you've got that, and the big opportunity is right there in front of you Monday night. Now, I wanted to lead with broader perspective in our initial segment, because anything that happened in Game 6, at this point, it's old news. Everything is about what happens Monday night, in much the same way that the Warriors, their lack of execution in Game 5, they quickly turned the page on that going to Game 6. So at this point in this kind of series, you have to have a short memory. That's something that Mike D'Antoni talks about a whole heck of a lot. We've seen throughout this series incredible fluctuations from one game to the next. So ultimately, the style of one game, the margin, if you've watched this series for six games and you think that what happened in one game is going to have very much of a carryover to the next one, I don't know what you're watching, quite frankly. So ultimately, I think you take the loss and you adjust, you go to the film, and you move on. And hopefully the home Game 6 can help you on a lot of fronts. And I would say that starts with the officiating, and also maybe your role players getting going, guys like Trevor Ariza, P.J. Tucker, that have been so huge for you in this series. And they were in the first half, but ultimately, collectively, the team, be it waving the white flag or just running out of gas, whatever it may be, the role players outside of James Harden, who had a big shots in the third quarter, used to not have anyone that was really making shots or any sort of offense on a consistent basis in the second half. As far as individual standouts in this game, I mentioned Harden and Gordon stat lines earlier. I think if there's some silver linings you're looking for, James Harden made four threes. He got to see the ball go through the net after entering 0 of 20. And really, I thought Harden, in a potential closeout game to send his team to the NBA Finals, he answered the bell. He had nearly a triple-double, scored 32. If you were worried about Harden's mentality, especially without Chris Paul, I thought he answered. I thought he played well. Were there a few too many turnovers? Yes, but I think some of it's attributable to the role player, some of it's shaky officiating. In general, I think it's being silly if you're blaming James Harden for this game. He actually had zero free throws in the second half, which is just absolutely ridiculous. Eric Gordon came out, shot above 50% from the field, was enormous early in the game, instrumental in you taking that 17-point lead after one, made nearly 70% of his threes. In terms of your big guns, I thought they answered the bell. I liked what I saw in terms of the DNA, whatever you look into their eyes and see. I thought James Harden and Eric Gordon looked ready to play, and especially if Chris Paul is out or limited, those are the guys you're going to have to lead on. I think they did their jobs. Ultimately, I think combination of the issues we've discussed earlier and then the Rockets, especially without Chris Paul, not having enough depth. Trevor Ariza had to shoot 18 times, or just an absence of... Where Chris Paul's absence really hurts you is a lot of times both of these teams are so good defensively, you just need a guy to step up at the end of the shot clock and hit a contested shot. And, of course, James and Eric can do that from time to time, but Trevor Ariza's field goal attempts surged to 18, made just six of them, and a lot of that was because late in the shot clock, the Rockets just had no one else to bail them out. P.J. Tucker, Clint Capella shot a combined 3 of 9. They're just not really shot creators. And then off the bench, there's just not much. I suppose Gerald Green, who had his minutes bumped to 26, and was 4 of 6 from the field, but made a lot of mistakes, turnovers, usual defensive lapses. Luke Bamute returned to the rotation, played 15 minutes, but was largely uninspiring in those minutes to the point where, well, he didn't score, and you could tell he didn't even play in the second half. Rockets were going to roll with a six-man rotation until it was clear in the fourth quarter that it was out of reach, and then in garbage time, you had Ryan Anderson, Joe Johnson, Aaron Jackson, but none of them did anything to inspire you for a potential Game 7 on their end, other than hoping that, you know, role players play better at home. You never know what could happen when you get at Toyota Center as opposed to Oracle Arena. But in my opinion, besides the obvious impacts of home versus road, it's that depth. That's where you really felt the absence of Chris Paul. I mentioned the turnovers. He could have been a steadying influence. Yes, your backcourt did have 14 turnovers between Harden and Gordon combined, but ultimately I think Harden and Gordon had enough shooting, playmaking to where they held their own. I think where the Rockets had a lot of problems tonight, and of course you're trying to stagger the minutes, and so you have minutes in which Harden's out there by himself or Gordon's out there by himself, and so you have just one playmaker, and ultimately that's when it felt like the ball got forced to Ariza or Gerald or whoever it may be. And with Paul out and without those 40 minutes, that's where it gets really tough. You had to bump Gerald to 26 minutes, but he had a lot of mistakes on both ends of the court. You had to play Luke Bamute, but he still looked not ready to go. You had to play Ariza 39 minutes, and not just play 39 minutes, but boost his usage on offense to a crazy rate. It's not so much that the Rockets can't survive without Chris Paul's playmaking, because you do have James Harden and Eric Gordon able to step up. It's just, without Chris Paul, there's a trickle-down effect in terms of having to boost minutes for sketchy quasi-rotation players, guys like Luke Bamute, Gerald Green, and then having to sort of boost the usage in terms of how much he's having to do offensively of someone like a Trevor Ariza, who's best certainly in a supporting role rather than a starring one. I think the Rockets, in terms of star power, James Harden and Eric Gordon, I liked what they gave you. You did not lose this game because James and Eric didn't show up. I think you lost this game because ultimately over 48 minutes, and this is aside from any issues with, you know, officiating, home court, all that, all those types of things, I think the lack of depth by the Rockets got exposed. And that's why, in my opinion, if Chris is able to go for a Game 7, even if he's limited, and by the way, keep in mind, he was already limited by a foot injury these last couple of games. A lot of what he's done has just come by pure savvy and technique rather than explosion. But if Chris is able to go out there, he helps you minimize the turnovers, which you had 21, and that, of course, will help you in terms of limiting the Warriors' transition game. That's when they got a lot of their threes, 16 of 38 as a team. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, 50% between them, 14 of 28. So you can limit their open looks if you reduce the turnovers. And also, even if Chris is not peak Chris Paul, which is at a basically all-star level this season, just having Chris out there, even if he only played 25 minutes, could do a whole heck of a lot, because having Chris Paul as a third option, it doesn't mean you're having to upgrade the shots and the usage of Trevor Ariza. You're not having to stretch the minutes for Gerald Green, Luke Bamute. And so that's why it's complicated. I don't think that the Rockets necessarily missed Chris Paul's star power in this game, because I thought James Harden and Eric Gordon did their part. I thought they missed Chris Paul's steadying influence. And ultimately, that's what they need in a Game 7. And it's sort of frustrating because the Rockets, aside from just the heartbreak of Chris Paul at 33 years old, closest thing he's ever come to the NBA Finals, suffering a hamstring injury at the worst time, the other part of it is that the Rockets were supposed to be a deep team, but ultimately, for a lot of reasons, the guys on your bench that you would like to trust to step up, Luke Bamute, Joe Johnson, Ryan Anderson, the Rockets just can't count on those guys right now. Maybe home court helps one of those guys. Keep your fingers crossed. But ultimately, those guys have not been factors for pretty much this entire series. So if you do get something of them in Game 7, it's more luck than it is design. Ultimately, the Rockets, they thought in February they had a much deeper team than they did. And some of it's, of course, with Luke, it's the shoulder dislocation. He's never been quite the same, even after he came back after the two-week absence that included the first round of the playoffs. But ultimately, the Rockets, they just don't have enough depth all the way through the 9-10 spot in the rotation. And so James Harden and Eric Gordon, they did their part as far as the heavy lifting. The Rockets shooters, P.J. Tucker, Trevor Ariza, they did their part in the first half to get the Rockets a double-digit lead. But ultimately, aside from any issues with officiating, the big difference in the second half was that the Rockets just collectively, once you got down to the five, six, seven spots in their rotation, just did not have nearly enough as the counterparts for Golden State. And over the course of 48 minutes in Oracle Arena, that took a big toll. So that segment leads to the obvious third and final segment of our 3 points recap, which is Chris Paul going to be out there for Game 7 on Monday night? And I'm going to stick with what I've said from the outset. My guess is that he will, although it remains to be seen exactly how effective he will be. I'm more optimistic on his potential effectiveness if he plays than most, because keep in mind he was already limited in terms of his explosion on that right leg because of the foot, the Achilles, whatever it may be. He's already kind of been getting by with savvy. And the other thing in this game, I think the Rockets showed in terms of being top heavy, between James Harden and Eric Gordon, they've got enough in terms of playmaking. And I think what they need Chris more for than anything is just solid, steadying minutes, control the pace, control the turnovers. And I think even if he's playing 70-80%, he's capable of giving you that. And in terms of why he would play, I've seen some say, well, it's risky. Is it really? Because the reason most guys sit out, as long as they do with hamstring injuries, is because there's always a greater good. It's like, if you bring them back early, then what if he re-aggravates that and it costs him more time down the line? Well, folks, the Western Conference Finals are tied at 3. This is by far the biggest game the Rockets will play their entire season. Because with or without Chris Paul, breaking news, the Rockets, if they advance to the NBA Finals, they would be favored over either the Celtics or the Cavaliers. So this is the biggest game the Rockets will play. In my opinion, it's the only elimination game they will play, win or lose. And ultimately, if Chris Paul can help you win that game, even if, hypothetically, it were to cost him the finals where he couldn't play, in my opinion, it would still be worth it. That's why I think Chris, if at all possible, goes out there on Monday night, and he can help you. Because it's not so much that you need him to create off the dribble. I liked that we had a bounce-back showing from James Harden. I thought Eric Gordon looked good. What you need him for is just trustworthy depth. And even if he's limited to, say, 25 minutes or so, that can help you a whole heck of a lot. The question is, can he even jog? And no one knows, other than the Rockets and people that have seen the MRIs. One of the things that I really don't like in terms of the characterizations of the Chris Paul injury to this point, a lot of them lack nuance. The reality, there is a huge difference between a grade 1, a grade 2, a grade 3. Ultimately, I don't think it's that severe based on what I've seen to this point. We actually saw him walking in to Oracle Arena on Saturday without any limp at all. He seemed to be in good spirits Friday. And ultimately, while walking is very different than jogging, let alone running, it's something certainly you can't do if you have a grade 3, which is a tear that may require surgery, and even severe grade 2s. I watched James Harden after he had his grade 2 pull on New Year's Eve against the Lakers, which kept him out 2.5 weeks, and he was an extremely fast healer. James Harden was not walking that well in the immediate days after his injury, as Chris Paul is now. So, just little context clues, I'm optimistic that Chris is not at the long end of the scale, but if he is, and walking is not kind of the ultimate arbiter here, then everything we can throw out there about the importance of the game, that he doesn't have to do that much, ultimately, if it's a grade 2 and he can't do anything more than walk, then he's not going to be able to play. And that might be the case. Based on what little we've seen to this point, I don't suspect that it is. But ultimately, no one knows other than the guys who have seen that MRI. And the Rockets are smartly kind of keeping tight-lipped about it. Of course, they said they'd reevaluate it when he gets back to Houston. They might announce it tomorrow, but my sense is that with it being a Game 7, there's no reason to kind of tip your hat. I think you wait until Monday either way to make a final determination. And, of course, you want to see exactly how he responds with a couple more days off to get more rest, treatment, those types of things. But that's what makes it so tough to speculate on Chris Paul, and I don't think that's being covered in the national media as well as it should, there is so much variance. A typical recovery timetable, mentioned the grade 3, which can require surgery, that's 6+ weeks, sometimes months. Grade 2 is typically 3 to 4 weeks, can be as much as 6. Grade 1 can be as mild as 7 to 10 days. And the reality is, we don't know what it is. If it's grade 1, and we're going from 7 to 10 days to basically 3 to 4, is that bumping up the timetable? Yes. Is it bumping it up insanely so, to the point where it's not even remotely feasible? No. I think grade 1, for example, is what he had in the 2015 playoffs, which I've referenced that analog a lot, when he played through it in Game 7 against the Spurs in the first round, then sat out the first two games of the semis, giving him that week off before returning Game 3 against the Rockets in that second round, a series that Houston ultimately won. I think that, to me, is what you're hoping for. And if it's a grade 1, you can bump it up a few days without it being just devastating. Now, is there a risk of re-injury? Sure, but I think for the Rockets and certainly for Chris, given the stakes, given the fact that Golden State is clearly better than who you would play in the finals, given that it's an elimination game, there are reasons to push the envelope and take the risk here. But ultimately, first off, it's Chris's choice. I suspect, given the cutthroat competitor he is, he's going to do everything possible to play. But part of it, we're all guessing. That's if it's a grade 1. You can bump it up a few days, and while it's still a risk, he's still not going to be close to 100%, it's feasible. If it's a grade 2, I don't think you can bump it up from 3 weeks to 4 days. And ultimately, at this point, we're just guessing. Only the folks with the MRI truly know. And it's tough to say by the reaction. I've seen some saying, well, he didn't, when he suffered the injury in Game 5, he couldn't get back on defense. He looked so frustrated on the bench, like he was going to cry. Okay, well, as I posted on Twitter, when the one that happened in Game 7 against the Spurs, which he played through, 27 points on nearly 70% shooting, including a buzzer beater over Tim Duncan, and one of the all-time classic NBA games of this century, he had his head in his hands after it on the bench. He's a competitor. He's frustrated. If he has to miss even a second, let alone a game, he's going to be frustrated. So no, I don't think from body language you can tell grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, whatever it may be, but ultimately that nuance is key. I think if it's a grade 1, he's going to be out there, and even if he's not able to be close to 100%, just the steadying influence, if you can limit the Gerald Green and Luke Bamute minutes, if you can limit the turnovers, which should limit the three-point attempts, at least the quality three-point attempts that guys like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson get, and then if you get the normal home bump and efficiency from your role players like Ariza and P.J. Tucker and Clint Capella. And, you know, Capella tonight was sort of an enigma in that he was very active. He had his 15 rebounds in 29 minutes, but just 2 points. It felt like on offense he was a walking, if not a turnover machine, just had a couple. It just felt like bad things happened when they got him the ball on those rolls. And that was in stark contrast to Game 5 when his offense at the rim was a big part of how the Rockets were able to survive a poor shooting night in, well, certainly the first half, but really the game. Clint Capella scoring in double digits, so maybe Capella, you can throw in there him finishing better at the rim, which is something that he has generally done much better at Toyota Center than he's done at Oracle Arena this series. But if you get a steady Clint Capella, you get better performance from your role players, and you get what you had from a scoring perspective from James Harden and Eric Gordon, can you win a Game 7? Yes, absolutely. You can ride the same formula that you did Game 4 and especially Game 5. And if there's one thing we've seen throughout NBA history, home teams in Game 7s, they have a very real chance. But ultimately, Chris Paul, whether he plays, is going to have a lot to do with that. We'll have to wait until at least Sunday, maybe Monday, to see. My guess is that he'll give it a go. We'll have to wait and see exactly how effective he is. But it wouldn't floor me if he didn't, because again, it's all going to come down to whether it's remotely realistic. If it's at all realistic, I think Chris will go. But as far as whether that is, it comes down to the MRIs, and only the folks that have seen the MRIs actually know. And then, of course, there's just the luck. Some players heal at different rates than others. We saw James Harden with the grade 2 heal much faster than most guys with the grade 2 do. So ultimately, if I had to bet, I think he plays, but it wouldn't floor me if he didn't. But either way, I do think the Rockets have a chance. But if Chris is able to play, even if he's compromised, I do think it would help you a whole heck of a lot in terms of winning a Game 7. So for now, I will leave it because I think that's enough talk for one late Saturday night. Not exactly a fun game for Rockets fans, so no reason to make this a long episode for a game that I'm sure you guys are probably sick of hearing about by the time you already click play on this episode. So without any further ado, final plugs. I'm Ben DuBose, your host. Follow me on Twitter, at Ben DuBose. The show on Twitter, at Locked On Rockets. We also got an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. A website at lockedonrockets.com, a Facebook account at facebook.com/lockedonrockets. Those are all places you can access our content or get more content in the or more takes in the interim from me. If there's an update on Chris Paul tomorrow, then certainly we'll have it on Twitter. That'll be the first place it breaks. But that's the best place for us to talk between now and Monday night's Game 7. Also, if you haven't already subscribed to us, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, wherever you listen to your podcasts, just search for Locked On Rockets. Subscribe to us. You get them right when they come out. And if you leave us a 5-star review, then that's how we remain viable with advertisers and make the business model work as the only daily podcast covering your Houston Rockets. Once again, the unhappy final from Oracle Arena, Warriors 115, Rockets 86, Game 7, Monday night, winner take all from Toyota Center, downtown Houston. This is why you won 65 games to get the Game 7 in Houston. Well, you've got it now, and it's 48 minutes to decide the season. Can't wait to see it all happen. We'll have one more show before then to sort of preview it, hopefully with more knowledge about Chris Paul's situation. Didn't hear much regardless Saturday, other than he wasn't able to give it a go today. As far as Monday, we heard from Mike D'Antoni what you'd expect. Don't know. And it's been consistent with what they said ever since Friday, which is that he'll be reevaluated when he gets back to Houston. Cross your fingers. That's all I know to say. Anyway, we'll talk more certainly in the next couple of days. And of course, after it ends on Monday, because either the Rockets advance to their first finals since 1995 or this wonderful season comes to a close. Either way, when it happens, just as we're there tonight, we'll be there to break it all down right here at Locked On Rockets, the only home for daily podcast commentary on your Houston Rockets.